You are listening to the Hirschsprung's Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprung's disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and ulcerative colitis. Each week, I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models, and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprung's with a positive message throughout.
Hello and welcome to episode 44 of Tom's Hirschsprung's podcast. With me today is an actor who has starred in Oliver as Mrs. Sowerbury, who was also on the UK Junior Eurovision jury in 2023. My guest today is Jamie Burkett. Jamie, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, hello.
Thanks so much for joining me and coming on. I know we were talking very briefly, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, but you are the fourth actor that I have had on. So I know we were talking a little bit about acting and Hirschsprung's and whether there's some kind of link to that as well. But thank you so much. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I'd like to start, if I may, just sort of from the beginning.
Yeah,
because anybody who's been following you for a while knows that you have a strong affiliation with Hirschsprung's disease that kind of runs in your family. You don't have it personally, but you have children who have Hirschsprung's and partners who has Hirschsprung's as well. I'd like to start sort of with the more recent experience of your children being born with Hirschsprung's. Would you like to start sort of from the beginning with that story?
Yeah, so I have one little boy called Dylan. He's nearly four now. So when he was born, obviously, Fred, that's my husband, Dylan's dad, he has Hirschsprung's. But I was sort of led to believe that it wasn't, you know, it didn't directly follow on. So it's a genetic disease, but it's not necessarily hereditary. Whether that is true, I don't know. I've done a lot of research into it, and I think some people disagree with that. And from all the Facebook groups I'm on, it seems like there's a lot of hereditary, but then it does also pop up out of the blue. So I was, I guess, naive and thought, oh, it's unlikely, because actually Fred's two brothers don't have it, but his dad has it. So his dad obviously had two sons without it before he had Fred. So Fred was the younger. So I thought, you know, it's very unlikely Dylan will have it. And luckily my brother-in-law, so Fred's brother, is a pediatric consultant at hospital. So he went into it obviously seeing Fred be in hospital so much, which is so lovely. So I got a lot of advice pre-birth from him and my sister-in-law, who's a GP, and, you know, they said that the first thing to look for was just to make sure that he passed the meconium, so, like, pooed immediately. So I was so hot on that. And when he didn't go to the toilet, you know, within a few hours, but he did breastfeed when he first was born, he fed, which I thought was a good sign. Anyway, cut to, he basically through the night started throwing up really intense green vomit. And the thing is, as a first-time mother, you don't really know. That's the scary thing, because you don't know what's normal. I mean, what is normal? But you don't know what is normal from a baby. You just think, oh, well, that's what babies do. But it got crazy. Like, I think I'd taken, and I'm an overpacker, so I'd taken like 20 baby grows, and I'd gone through them all in the first day. They were all covered in green, like bright green sick. It was like something out of Ghostbusters. And I kept asking, like, he hasn't gone, he hasn't passed the meconium, and he's vomiting this green stuff. And I kept being told by the doctor that was seeing me, which was it a young man, and that'll come back in a sec. And he kept saying, no, you're a first-time mom, and it was a C-section, and it's really common, you're just worried. And at first I thought, okay, give him the benefit of the doubt. And I went with it. But then after sort of a day and a half, and the baby was, Dylan was just crying all the time. And I was constantly like, and I could hear the babies in the beds next to me eating, and he then he wouldn't eat. He hadn't taken any milk from me since that very first time when he was born. And I just knew. Like, they say that you know and you just do. Like, there's an instinct there. And I kept crying to the midwives and saying, I did have a pretty horrendous time. It's only looking back and when I tell people the story that I think, actually, that wasn't right. I kept crying to all my midwives. And I get it, they're overworked. But I don't think I got the best care I could have. And then eventually at about 6 in the morning, delirious, I had an older lady, one of the midwives, and I just cried to her like she was my mom or my nana. And I said, please, please get me another doctor. Get me another doctor to look at my baby. And rightly or wrongly, and I maybe shouldn't admit this is what I said, but I was like, please get me a woman. Please get me a woman. And so a woman doctor came, an older woman doctor, and she took one look at him and was like, no, that's not right. And I said, okay. So she took him into what I can only deem the back office. It wasn't like
not like a ward or anything. Just
on the ward, no. Like, all the people there, and they were sat there. And she put a tube down his throat, and I remember her saying, as long as it doesn't come back black, everything's okay. But literally the second she said that, all this black came up, like from his throat. And I had a 90 on with mice on it. I don't know why that I remember that. But and I said, what does this mean? And she said, okay, that means we have to take him to NICU. And again, as a first-time mum, you hear that and think the absolute worst. And she said, do you want to go and get changed and meet us down there? I was like, no. Just walk in the hospital, through Luton Hospital, dressed as a mouse. God help me. And I went to NICU. And obviously it was COVID. So Fred wasn't with me. I was completely on my own the entire time. Which again was really hard because Fred and I are like a proper team. So being without him was really difficult. And then they'd said, Fred can now come because he's in NICU, obviously the neonatal intensive care unit. And so he then came, which, I was a bit like, oh, now he can come, now that and it's a really scary place to be. There's babies in incubators and there's people, and because of COVID, everyone was not just masked. It was like in, hazmat suits. It was very scary. And what I will say, though, is the care I received in that NICU ward was far better than I had received on the postnatal ward. Everyone in there was incredible, and it would be remiss of me not to mention that. There was one particular, I don't know if she was a nurse or a doctor, I can't remember. I think she was called Helen, and she was amazing. She got down on her knees because I was sat down, and she was like, we will give your son the best care, because I was hysterical. They scanned him and said, first they said it was fine and there was no suspicion. I'd constantly said about the Hirschsprungs. Again, I just don't think, though, like in mainstream hospitals, it's well known enough. Because you say Hirschsprungs, and honestly, I'd say like 90% of people don't know what you're talking about. And if I've seen, one spelling of it, I've seen 45. And it's fine, but with babies, I feel like we need to be doing better, actually. And so they were like, no, it's fine. There's no obstructions. Everything's fine. So I was like, okay, good. So then we were worried as to what else could it be? And then the consultant came around maybe an hour later and said, actually, there is a suspicion on his bowel and we're going to blue light you to Great Ormond Street. So everything just happened really quick. And again, hearing that is terrifying because you do think, rightly or wrongly, or I did, that's it, that my baby's going to die, or is certainly knocking on the door of that. So I was hysterical. And because of COVID, I wasn't allowed in the ambulance with him. So they took him in a special ambulance with these two women who obviously were the ambulance staff, who again were really lovely. And I got in a taxi behind, having just had a C-section, all the way to London. So that was a traumatic drive. And then we got to Great Ormond Street late at night, It was about 11 o'clock at night. So it was like really dark. And one of the things that always struck me, although we sort of never saw him again, was the doctor that first assessed Dylan was called Dylan.
Oh, right.
And we were like, okay, that's a good sign. And it was like a whole different, you know, I don't want to speak bad about Luton and Dunstable, but I will.
I'll be on it.
But Gosh is like a whole different world. Like, it was like going from like a one star to like a five star all inclusive. You know what I mean? It's just, yeah. Just everyone there is just kind and calm. And, you know, people were saying, can I get you some water? Can like everyone cared about me just as much as Dylan, which I thought was, which is kind of a given, I think, that people in those children's hospitals are going through the worst times of their life. Really, really. So when we got there, I felt safe. I felt really safe. And they were amazing. They took him in and we were in for a very long time. We were in for nearly a month that first time because they were doing, they have to do biopsies to officially say it's Hirschsprung's, which took a long time because he was so poorly and obviously he had to be well enough to have the biopsies done of his bowel. He'd got infections, so he was on, you know, a drip and a central line and so many antibiotics. And then they said that they were going to teach us to do washouts, which is basically where you put a tube up the bum and then it brings out the poo from the rectum. And that's what we were going to do, so we were learning that. But then after a week of them monitoring us doing that, we realized that we couldn't do enough, if that makes sense. So we were doing like 8 a day, but actually it was like, well, maybe you need to do 10. And they said that we had to get it to do the official biopsy. I think he had to have not had a washout for like 12 hours. So it was something like that, and which was just impossible because he was just swelling up so big. And then after, I think, yeah, 2 or 3 weeks of that, they our surgeon, who is amazing, who we're seeing tomorrow actually for a review, which is Professor De Coppi. I'll tell you a fun little story about him in a minute. He came and he said to me, he's amazing. I love that man. He said, look, it's going to be a stoma now. And it's I'm sort of half terrified and half, okay, that's fine. Because I just wanted something to happen, you know. Yeah. And he was given a stoma and a colostomy bag, a stoma bag attached. And we had to get his eating up because his weight was so bad. So then I was in for another week trying to get his weight up, which wasn't really happening. Because I think then he hadn't fed for so long. Then he would only take from like the bottle. And it was, gosh, like I think about it now and sort of reliving it. There was, the things I'm just recalling now are probably 10% of actually what went down. It was a lot. So that was the sort of first journey. And then then he was healthy and after, yeah, we came home. So he was born 17th of January and we came home end of February for the first time. So I'd left have a baby with, you know, like one outfit in my bag and came home nearly 6 weeks later.
Wow.
So it was a bit crazy. But, you know, I have a huge, amazing team around me, like my mom and Fred and Fred's family and all my friends. And we were in COVID, which was awful. But a friend used to come sort of most days and walk around the park with me, just with a coffee. And not just one, I had a couple, but one in particular, Leo, he lived really close by. So we used to, and honestly, the mental health aspect of that, you know, when you think, I look back now and think, God, those walks around the park for half an hour, 45 minutes probably saved me in that time. They kept me sane. So that was the first bit. But I realised I'd be talking a lot.
No, you go as long as you need to. I just wanted to ask on that mental health aspect. I know you did a post about how how much support you received from Gosh and everything, and just how important that was. And it's something that certainly when I was born with Hirschsprungs, that would be 30 odd years ago. That was something that would be completely overlooked then, that's so, so important now. Can we talk just a little bit more about that?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Yeah, there are, like, listen, I am a fully paid up member of the GOSH fan club. I think it's an incredible place. And I'm actually, funnily enough, the Zoom I'm doing straight after this is for a charity that works with GOSH. And I sing for kids. So I am literally about to sing for two wards in GOSH. And they do a sound with an iPad. And I sing to the kids that can't leave their bed. And that's because when I was at GOSH, I kept saying to people, because I'd just finished, had I just finished Linus? Yeah. Oh, I'd been not long out of Linus. And, you know, the nurses found this out and found that interesting. And at the time, I just wanted to do anything I could, like, to help anybody, because I felt like people were helping me. So I kept saying, like, look, if there's any kids that love musical theatre, like, please, I'll come and I'll sing for them. And obviously, for, like, safety and safeguarding, they can't just let me wander around the wards, which is more enough. So when one of the first things I looked into was a charity that did that. And now I work for them. So
wow.
It's amazing. I honestly, it makes me so incredibly happy. And I think it makes me slightly off topic. Like, I feel really privileged because I know that it's not just for the kids, it's for the parents. And they don't know, because obviously we don't really talk about it. But they don't know, but I know. And it just, I don't know, it just makes me feel like if I can give that family like a tiny bit of respite, even if it's 1%, then that makes me happy.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
It's so amazing. Like, they have everyone from the play team are incredible, like genuinely incredible. They come, like, we had this big fiber optic thing at the bottom of the bed that they brought when Dylan, because Dylan has really weak veins. So he kept, and I'm sure people listening to this will have had this, but anytime they tried to put a cannula in, it failed. He also was a newborn baby. So we were getting cannulas that were lasting hours rather than days or weeks. And so there was a point where he just was going from cannula to cannula to cannula, and the doctors and nurses couldn't get it in. So we were having to have the specialist team come with their light. At one point, even the specialist team couldn't get it in. So they had to bring up an anaesthetist to do it, which that part genuinely, I think, was the worst bit. Like, watching those cannulas have to be constantly, and then constantly be like, the cannulas failed. That was the work, because it just felt like failure after failure. And the play team would come and they'd try and distract him, and they'd put lights on and they'd play with, you know, little finger puppets. And again, it's for Dylan. Of course it is. But I also felt that it was for me, because you feel so helpless watching your child scream and cry. You don't know what to do. So, and that child is so little, they don't have any vocabulary. So those people with their little hand puppets and their you know, laughter, just actual God tier people, they're just, for me, the best. Yeah. And then I had this amazing experience where one of the CNSs, so clinical nurse specialists, so we have three attached to Dylan's case, and they're all amazing. I don't know if it's Stockholm syndrome, but I felt like if it was allowed, I'd be friends with everyone. Like,
right. Yeah.
Like, I genuinely felt like I would be friends with all these women, but maybe that is Stockholm
syndrome. It sounds a little Stockholm syndrome.
I was genuinely like, we'd be friends. And one of them came into my room one day and said, so kind and wonderfully, and she said, someone has identified that you might benefit from speaking to one of our counsellors. Now, I don't know who that was. It will have been a nurse, I'm sure. But I just thought it was such an incredible thing that a nurse had gone to this CNS and said, look, I think she's struggling. And I was on my own. I think she's really struggling and maybe would benefit from that. And the way they handled it was so perfect because it didn't feel like anyone was saying there's something wrong with you or you need help. It was, let us help. And I said, oh, okay. And I spoke to someone a couple of times whilst I was in hospital, which was really helpful. And then when I left hospital, I had, was it weekly? I think it was weekly or certainly bi-weekly for about a year. Zoom sort of therapy sessions with a GOSH therapist. And again, I had a thing of like, if we weren't therapists, we'd be friends. She's definitely, I'm sure, a trope. But, and she was unbelievable. She was just amazing. And I went basically straight back into work where Dylan was 3 months old. And so I was on tour with the show and having these sessions, and I had Dylan with me. So I was touring with Dylan, with my mum, who was my childcare. I was doing a show every night with a child with a stoma bag.
Wow. And
we made it work. And I actually look back on that whole year as like, and I'm sure I will when I'm older, I'll look back and think, I can't believe we made that work. And it was such a success and it was so brilliant. And I'm so proud of us all. Yeah, and I think a lot of that, and the reason I could go back to work, and the reason that I could function and be happy and everything, was because of the help I got, you know?
Absolutely.
I think it's such a huge, huge thing that makes all the difference.
Absolutely. I think, thank you so much again for sharing that. And sharing it so publicly as well on your page, because I think it would be easy to just go, oh, I don't want to talk about it, or I don't want to say this, or I don't want to say that. But thank you so much for sharing, because I think there will be, especially people listening to this, will maybe have gone through something very, very similar, and will be thinking, oh, actually, I mean, it undoubtedly, you know, especially when you have a child with an illness that nobody's heard of, nobody knows about, and you're constantly searching for answers and searching for this, that, the other, it's going to take a toll, most definitely.
And I think because of what the disease is, I think, you know, we've moved forward as a world, but like, it is a disease of the bowel, and it means that there is a lot of poo. I mean, I feel like I'm an expert on the bowel now. Do you know what I mean? It's like, see if anyone talks to me about poo or anything, and what's weird now is I feel like I'm the person people talk to about their bowels.
Yeah. Yes, you're a bowel expert.
I'm the bowel expert. No, but even if, like, you know, one of my colleagues hasn't been to the toilet or isn't feeling great, I feel like they come to me, and I'm like, I love that I've now got this sort of like poo princess, like, do you know?
Yeah, you have a de facto role.
Queen of poo, yeah. But I take the title with pride. Because once you've got a kid with Hirschsprungs, or I assume had Hirschsprungs, all of that goes out the window. Like, I don't care about anything anymore. Like, I have no squeamish, like, I'm just, like, none of it phases me. Which I love. But I do think, like, When it's to do with like the bowels and poo and things, people get a bit more embarrassed about talking about it. And I think we need to just sort of get over that, because we all do it. And that for me was, and sort of is still a little bit, if I'm being honest, like my concern when it all happened was that it's weird where the brain goes, was that I don't want him to be bullied. I don't want kids to bully it. That was where my brain went. I'll have an accident at school.
Yeah.
But now, best believe, I'm like ready for a fight.
Yeah, find anyone.
Also, like, Dylan has done so well with potty training, and he has accidents. But I am very much like, I'm trying definitely to be more like, who cares?
Yeah.
But because who actually cares, like, realistically? Like, and anyone who does care, then they don't matter.
not worth the time.
They're not worth the time. And that actually is the sort of the crux of it, isn't it? It's like, I remember my husband, Fred, told me this incredible story that I've never forgotten, that when he was at school, so I don't know if you're the same, and he won't mind me sharing this, but because obviously he has Hirschsprung's and he had total colonic, which is what Dylan has. So when he goes to the toilet, it's obviously quite explosive and it's quite loud. So when he went to the toilet as a young person, so let's say like 8, 9, 10, his best friend used to come to the toilet with him and used to put his hands under the hand dryer and used to keep the hand dryer going so no one would ever hear it.
Oh, that's so nice.
The nicest thing you've ever heard.
Oh, that's lovely. Thank you, Sharon. That's brilliant.
And I that has never left me, because whenever I had like wobbles about like, well, kids are cruel, Fred would be like, you know what? Some kids are amazing. And I'd be like, yeah, you're right.
I think sometimes we can go towards the negative quite often, and we can think, oh, what if this and what if that? But actually the opposite could very well be true, and people could do extra things for you, you know, as opposed to doing negative.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's definitely where I like have to think that, because that's better for my mental health to think that than to think like bad of people.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think mental health is such a huge thing. It's a huge, huge thing.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
And as well, I mean, when it comes to Great Ormond Street, I know you've touched on a little bit as well, just how important and how great the nurses were to you at Great Ormond Street. Having been there for 16 years myself, I've seen sort of the ins and the outs, and just how incredible they are.
Yeah.
But I saw that you'd written that they were making tea for you and they were doing this and they were doing that. Just how sort of amazing were they?
They're the best people I've ever met, like, honestly. And that, I say that with no hyperbole. Like, I just genuinely, like, I remember every single person that saw Dylan. And, you know, tomorrow when we go in to see Professor DeCoppi, we always tend to go up to the wards. Our ward was Chameleon and Bumblebee. I'll tell you about that in a sec. But Chameleon ward was the main one we were on. And so we were on for that first 6 weeks. Then we came back to have the operation when he was one. So I'd taken time off work and blah, blah, blah. And then Dylan got really sick. He got really poorly. He had what we now know as enterocolitis. And it was decided that he couldn't have the operation because he wasn't well, like he wasn't strong enough to sustain it. So then it was put back a few months. I think it wasn't that much. It was maybe 2 or 3 months. So then the day finally came, you know, there's all the anticipation, and we got there and he was taken in and it was amazing. And Fred and I remember we just walked into London because Great Ormond Street is in Russell Square. And I just said, look, I just need to keep busy. So we walked into London and we were just wandering, and I was in Marks and Spencer's and I got a call, and we'd only been gone from the hospital, like, well, however long it takes to walk to Oxford, so an hour, maybe 45 minutes. And we got a call and I saw it was Gosh, and I answered, and it was, I think, one of the nurses. And she was like, hi, Jamie, like, is it possible for you to come back? And I was like, is everything okay? Is it? And she was like, everything's absolutely fine. Just we're not able to proceed like we thought. And like, and I again was hysterical, but she calmed me so that I knew there was nothing wrong. And again, her manner, perfect, because you hear that and you think something tragic has happened. But I felt very held. We went back and it was discovered that they'd done biopsies and that it wasn't short section or long section. It was total colonic. And he was one at the time. And they said, and Mr. Decoppi was said, you know, for the amount that we're going to have to take out of this child now, it is best we wait till he's a bit bigger. So that's what they did. Actually, I'm saying that, was it 6 months then? And then he came back at one. Yes, I think that was it. Sorry. I think we had to do the operation at 6 months. And so this was, by now we'd already had it, you know, because he'd been ill the last time. So this was now the second, you know, iteration of it. So then we had to then wait another, and we had to pack up. And it's silly because it's like, you know, your child is safe and happy, but your whole being has been leading up to this. And they're just so amazing at making sure that you're supported. And it's, I can't tell you, it's such a team as well. You know, it's not just one person, they all look after you. And then we came back to have the pull through. He had a de Hamel pull through procedure. So we came back when he was just over one to have it. And then we got a call. So we were in the accommodation, you know, the on-site accommodation. Yes. And we got a call that morning to say that too many people had COVID, because that was when I think it was Omicron had come and everyone was off that. And there wasn't enough nurses in Chameleon for him to go to Chameleon ward, which... those were all the nurses I knew. It was the place I knew. So I was like, oh, God. Oh, no. And they said, don't worry, it's still going to be fine. Like, the surgical team are all well and they're all here. However, we're going to have to put you on a different ward, pre-op and post-op. Pre-op and post-op. And we're going to put you on Bumblebee ward. And I was really didn't want to go. But we got there. And they were amazing. They were so great. Like, I remember so many of the nurses we had. There was so too many to name. And they were all just so wonderful. And Dylan had his birthday there, his first birthday, that's right. And one of the nurses, I think it was Fiona, when I was asleep, she came in. Well, it was more than one, probably. And they decorated the room.
Oh, no way.
It was like balloons. There was a birthday banner. But the happy birthday banner as well, she'd made it. So it wasn't just one that had been bought at a shop and stuck up. Because I asked the next day, I said, who did this? And they were like, oh, she sat up all night making it for you. Like, cutting it out. And I was like, what is going on? And it's huge, this happy birthday. And then they came and they gave him a present, which I'm sure is, you know, gosh, protocol for a child that is in.
But it's nice. Very nice.
Gorgeous. But for me, the present and everything was absolutely wonderful. But it was the fact that one of the nurses sat up and made that sign. I was like, and you know, it had Dylan and it had cut out. And a girl who I know who makes cake, who I only knew from like Zoom play readings that me and a bunch of actors did over COVID. We'd never met in real life. She messaged me and said, can I bring you a cake? And she doesn't just make little cakes. She makes like proper, like really expensive, really amazing cakes. She did one recently for the Queen. Like that.
Oh, wow.
She brought me this massive cake with, it was unbelievable. Like, and it just, honestly, I think sometimes though, the worst time of your life can, there are such glimmers of brightness and like, you see, you do, sadly, that, you know, some people do show their true colours and you do get that. But you also see the absolute best in people. And whether that's nurses, doctors, friends that maybe you didn't realise were friends, acquainted, like it. So I do think that throughout that whole year, it was the worst year of my life, but equally the best year of my life.
Yes. Yes, yeah. I know what you mean, and there'll be a lot of people that are listening to this guy. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. I don't want to go through it again. I'm all right with it.
No.
But yeah, it was, the nurses are the lifeblood of GOSH. They really are. They're the lifeblood. And to be a nurse right now, I think with the political climate and everything, I think is really hard. So they've got to take a lot of stick all day, every day. And for them to be so kind and warm is just, like, I think, amazing. So I'm pro nurse, pro God.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you're preaching to the choir here a little bit. Having been there for half my life, I'm very much pro gosh in every single way imaginable.
Yeah.
And as we were talking as well, you are the first person I've spoken to who's been through gosh, which surprised me a lot.
What do you mean?
In terms of, I never met anybody who's been through gosh.
Oh, I see what you mean. It's usually Alder Hey and things like that, which is great.
Okay, yes. Alder Hey are brilliant. They're absolutely fantastic. Yeah. One of the best at what they do. But yeah, in terms of gosh, you are the first person I've spoken to, which is...
Hey.
Yeah.
You should definitely speak to my husband as well, because he went through gosh. And how old are you? Do you mind me asking?
32.
And he's 39. And he had, I don't know if you had the same doctor, he had Mr. Kiley, Jonathan Kiley.
Yes. Yes. Oh. He's the greatest man ever.
Well, but do you know this? So when we met Professor Tacopi, they spoke to Fred and they said, oh, you were here. And Fred was like, I was here, you know, my whole childhood. And they said, oh, who was your surgeon? And he said, Mr. Kiley. And everyone in our surgical team was like, ah, like he was the messiah. And then they said, because we had the sort of second and thirds in command on the, you know, the ward rounds. And they said, Mr. Tacopi is like his protege. Like, Mr. Kiley trained Mr. Tacopi.
That's like, amazing.
They're like friends. And so, like, often when he would come and talk to us, he'd be like, I was just speaking to him yesterday. And obviously, I don't know Mr. Kiley, but I know it meant so much to Fred. And Fred felt like we had that sort. It was like a guardian angel was there. And so we had a funny little moment where obviously medical advancements have improved since, you know, the 80s. And Fred lifted his jumper and said, will Dylan's scars look like this? Mr. Tacopi sort of did like a sort of glib little laugh and was like, no. They won't like that. Shit. No, we were lying there. Okay.
So mine probably looks like Fred's then. My stomach looks like Fred's, I would imagine.
He's got like a big scar across his stomach, like the middle of his stomach. Yeah, yeah. Do you have...
Train track.
He has like a weird one on his knee as well, which he calls his star scar.
On his knee?
Yeah. Something obviously went into his knee. We don't know.
No,
you don't have that one. My God.
No, I've got the train track that goes across.
That's exactly what he's got, yeah.
The thing that looks like a train track, yes. So, yeah, but that's really good to see, though, that medical advancements have taken off.
Yeah, so Dylan's looks like a C-section scar.
Okay.
It's like lower, and it looks exactly like my C-section scar. And then, obviously, he has the scar where the stoma was, and then he's got, like, four little scars where they did the biopsies. So he has like maybe like sort of an inch big where the stoma was, and then maybe 3 or 4 inches big where obviously everything came out of. But actually, I think if you weren't looking for it, you wouldn't see it.
No.
You know?
I think that's the thing, especially, I know mine's short segment, so it's a little bit different.
Why?
But if people were to see me just sort of walking around or whatever, they wouldn't notice. They wouldn't know, oh, he's had 10 operations, he's got Hirschsprung's, he's whatever. You know, I am, to all intents and purposes, quote unquote, normal.
Yeah, but this is the thing, isn't it? Is that when people find out either Fred or Dylan have Hirschsprung's, and they're like, God, they're so normal. And I'm like, yeah, but what is normal? Like, there isn't a normal. Like, nobody's normal. You know, so it's all relative, isn't it? Everything's relative.
Absolutely. And just as we sort of wind down towards the end, I'm just starting to get sort of, in terms of Dylan, what would you like to see sort of in the future for Dylan? Would you like him to become an actor like you and then appear on this podcast in 20 years' time and talk about
it? I mean, I don't know. I always said, like, absolutely not, because I know how brutal the industry is, and it's a tough old industry. But I will say, he does, I think he does show signs of it already. I don't know, maybe that's okay. But like he, I mean, he's not even four yet, and he came to see me in Peter Pan Goes Wrong more than once and sat through the whole thing, which is like a 2-hour long play. He saw it like 3 or 4 times, and then he came to see Oliver when we were in Chichester. We're not open in London yet. And sat through the whole thing again and was singing the songs. He acts out Mr. Bumble. That's his favourite character. So I'm like, oh, no.
He's got it. He's got the acting.
What a monster. So maybe. I just want him to be healthy and happy. Like, honestly, I would love him to do, yeah, like really physical things because, like, absolutely, why not? I'd love him to be dancing, sports, all that. Like, I just want him to... no one to ever know that there was or is anything inverted commas wrong with him. You know, that's my goal.
Fantastic. That's brilliant. And then just for you personally, what is next for you and your acting career?
So I'm just about to open in the West End with Oliver. So we did an out-of-town season at Chichester Festival Theatre in the summer. And then we've had a few weeks off and we go back into rehearsals in a couple of weeks, and we open at the Gielgud in December. And it's an incredible production. I mean, I love Oliver. It's one of my favourite shows, so I'm really proud to be part of it. And I get to play sort of the mean character in Act 1, but then I also play Mrs. Bedrin, and she's the nice character in Act 2. So I get a nice journey.
Okay, so you get a bit of column A, a bit of column.
Exactly. Yeah. It's great fun.
And then just lastly, again, thank you so much for all of your insight and sharing your story that I think will resonate with an awful lot of people that certainly I've spoken to that haven't been on the podcast that sort of message me privately and tell me certainly things that have gone on in your life that have also gone on in theirs as well.
Yeah.
In terms of where people can find you, follow your story and Dylan's story, where can they find you?
So I'm on Instagram. I have 2 pages. I do have the Mama Birkett page, which I have to say I haven't used in a long time because I should really start it back up again. So you can follow me on there, or you can follow my personal page, which is JKM Birkett, which is BIRKETT, which is basically everything. So there's Dylan, there's my acting, there's all my stupid rants about, you know, all sorts of things. That's the one I post on the most, but I do have both. But yeah, anyone who wants to contact me or speak to me, I'm so like open and up for it, and I love to hear from other people with Hirschsprungs, parents with Hirschsprungs. Like, I think it's great, you know, support in numbers. I think that's how we, that's just, I think, being a parent, but
yeah, certainly.
You know what I mean? But definitely a parent of a child that maybe has, you know, additional things. But it's good. Dylan's just about to, you know, he'll be starting school in September. So it's great to hear from people that have gone through the school process. So yeah, if anyone wants to chat to me, I'm so up for it.
Awesome. Thank you so, so much. And I wish you the best of luck with Oliver and the best of luck with Dylan as well. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks so much. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you for listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio. You can find me on Facebook under Tom's Hirschsprungs Podcast or Instagram on Tom's_Hirschsprungs_podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show and we'll bring you another episode soon.